when you hear people scream, well, we don't have employable youths, they are not telling a lie. It's the truth, it's our reality. Because what you experience within the four walls of the school and the reality when you come out to work is essentially different. That time where you're coming out of school, you're getting a job, you're going to work in civil service, or you're going to become a teacher or a lecturer. But times have changed, right? How many young people today would finish from the university and get an opportunity in civil service if they do not already have someone? And so the jobs that are bound today, the jobs that are available, are, you know, set up by private entities, private institutions, and everything has changed, right? So the curriculum that was set some 50, 70 years ago cannot still be appropriate for this time.
Hi everyone, it's Oluwani Femi Kolawole. Welcome to Modern Workplace Conversations, where we explore critical and often under-discussed topics within the professional world. Every week, I feature experts ranging from HR professionals to operators to lawyers and CEOs to provide you with diverse perspectives on workplace issues, trends, and best practices. Joining me today is Nwanne Nwonwu, the founder of the Talent Pipeline, a talent development startup. And we're discussing disparity between what academic institutions produce and what companies really need, what talent can do to make themselves marketable, and what companies can also do to get the best out of the talent that academic institutions produce. Let's get into the conversation.
If somebody wants to listen to you, like, what is that interesting thing you want them to know about you?
Sorry, what's interesting about me? So I'm an introvert. People tend to find it, they don't believe when I say I'm an introvert or I'm shy. So I'm an introvert and I'm a shy person, like both of them at the same time. But hey, in the line of work that I do, I have to be outspoken, I have to network, and I found a way around it. That's one interesting fact that people do not know about me, and every time I mention it, it's just like, it's a lie. How can you be an introvert, or how are you shy? I like my peace and quiet, I enjoy my solitude, but at the same time, I like to have a good time with, you know, my own people. I love to meet new people, I love to put together events. I think I come alive the most when I have to put together an event, a program, something. Like, I'm alive, just making things happen, connecting people to opportunities. Those are the type of things that make me think.
Yeah, I'm sure you did not learn that in the four walls of the school, of the university. And that brings us to our conversation today. There's this trend that has been going on for a while, for even a decade, and it's a line that is being used to sell trainings that you have to do outside school, because it's likely believed that what school is teaching or what school is training graduates for is not what the market is asking or demanding from graduates. And it seems like there's a gap that has been created. And so I want to ask from you, going by what you currently do, can you confirm or refute that universities or tertiary institutions are not producing what the market wants?
Absolutely. It's no longer news that what we talk a lot about how we have talent. Yes, Nigeria, we have like lots of talented people. The question is, are they employable? So you see, when you hear people scream, well, we don't have employable youths, they are not telling a lie. It's the truth, it's our reality. Because what you experience within the four walls of the school and the reality when you come out to work is essentially different. Reason being that, so the curriculum, when it was set, was good for that time. It was the right fit for that time, because when you go through, the idea was, so you have your primary education, you go to secondary school, and then you go into the university or college of education, depending on, you know, the path that you're going to pursue. Essentially, it was filling a gap for that time where you're coming out of school, you're getting a job, you're going to work in civil service, or you're going to become a teacher or a lecturer. But times have changed, right? How many young people today would finish from the university and get an opportunity in civil service if they do not already have someone? And so the jobs that are bound today, the jobs that are available, are, you know, set up by private entities, private institutions, and everything has changed, right? So the curriculum that was set some 50, 70 years ago cannot still be appropriate for this time. Essentially, I'd say that there has to be a collaboration between town and gown. right? So what's happening within the four walls of the school and what's happening now in industry, it's very, very different. And if the private sector, so those who are employers of labor now, are staying away from what's being done within the four walls of the school, then there is a problem. And if also those who are setting the pace by teaching the future workforce what they're supposed to be doing, if they're not in tandem with what is going on in the industry, then there is a problem. Because then you see that you've gone through school, you've done your BSc, you've done your master's, you've even done a PhD, and then you're lecturing, and you're just very comfortable in that space. You do not know what's happening in the industry that you're going to, that you're teaching or lecturing people to go into. Then there is a problem, because all you're going to do is theoretical. Are you keeping up to date with what's happening? Are you keeping up to date with what the trend is? So now everybody's talking about tech. Everybody wants to get into tech. And the truth is that in tech, in the tech ecosystem, you do not have only software engineers or designers. You have business, you have business developers, you have product managers, you have content writers, you have digital marketers. So when they're going through the university, all the things that they're learning in class, is it in tandem with the type of work or the jobs that they're going to, go into? But I'm even going too futuristic, quote unquote. If we even talk about the normal traditional career paths that we know, say accounting or even law, it's there a school, well, a public tertiary institution in Nigeria today, who they are now helping people understand startup law. Are they even interested, or are we just going the old way? So like everybody's going through law, you go through your 4 years of school, you go into law school, and then you come out and it's the same thing, and then you're now trying to figure out where do I fit in. You're looking for an opportunity within a startup organization, and then you do not even know the basic things that is required of you as a lawyer to set in place. And I think those are like the major issues that we need to focus on, and that's why I believe that there needs to be a partnership between the academia and the industry. What's happening today? How can we help? How can we learn from you? So it's more practical than theoretical. How can we get people to start to intern even when they're in school, so that they understand what is waiting for them out there, as opposed to like just putting them in a classroom and lecturing to them from the notes that the lecturers probably received from their lecturer.
Right. So you've mentioned something which I believe is very important, and that is curriculum. Looking at how standardized institutions are, they have high level of bureaucracy. There are a lot of hurdles to pass through, even if you want to change one thing in the curriculum. And I don't know whether that is excusable for the kind of curriculum we have, but you've mentioned curriculum as one of the things that is wrong with what social institutions are bringing out and what the market really needs. So what exactly is the need of the market? At least if institutions should know what the market needs, they will know how to structure what they are producing to fit it, not like expected of them. Maybe the institutions will take that into mind. But yes, what does the market need?
Even as we talk about the curriculum, right, I think essentially it's a complete, like a total overhaul, not just from the tertiary institution. It boils down to even the elementary. Because some of the things that are lacking in the individuals that are graduating from the university, it's that they are setting fundamental problems. It's not at the tertiary level that they even start to learn those things, right? Things like, how do you communicate? Take, for example, in primary school, I went to, both of us, I'm sure that when I tell you this story, you can relate to it. So they're in primary school, and you're challenging your students as a teacher. You don't want anybody to hear or see from you, like, I have to be the winner. Like, there's that constant battle that I have to be the only one that knows it. There is nobody is, facilitating or teaching people to work together, to collaborate, to help one another. It's a me system. It's a me society. Like, I have to be the only one that passes. I have to be the first, because I have to be the only one that passes, so that I can come first and my parents will be proud of me, and then they'll get me stuff. Nobody is, encouraging them to come together and collaborate, team up together, study together, right? And these are, you might not think about it as so much of a big deal, but then it just goes to show the type of individuals that you're building as they grow up. It's not when you now become 18 or 19 and you're getting into the university that you now start to learn that. It's what has been, given to you right from when you were a child. And so yes, we wouldn't blame it totally on the institution. Even in, as a parent, how are you raising your child? Right? So we all have like a whole lot of work to do as a parent. How are you raising your child to communicate right, to be efficient, to manage their time appropriately. So it's okay that as a child, as a toddler, you're guiding them. They get up to like their preteen years, they're guiding them. But at the point where they become teenagers, you want to start to give them some autonomy of their own, of their self, so that they are responsible. Because by the time they get into the university, you're not going to be there with them. You're not going to wake them up in the morning and tell them that you have to go for your class. Right? So all of these things need to be infused. So yeah, but at home and in school, there are lots of things that need to be done. And so that's why I think even the curriculum from the elementary level, because we're so focused on quote unquote academia, arithmetics, it's good. We're focused on English, it's good. We're focused on social studies, but we've taken history away from schools. We're focused on science. But there are basic things that you need to teach a child from a very young age so that they grow up in that line. So now we have people who are working and we're trying to teach them the essentials of having soft skills, what I like to call core human strength skills, right? How do you communicate? How are you empathetic towards someone who your colleague? Are you able to work together as a team? How are you managing your time? These are things that should have been taught right from the elementary stage and not even when you're now getting into the workforce.
So now, unfortunately, you know, as you're mentioning it now, it just occurred to me that we've lost a lot of things in training. Things that we're supposed to have learned growing up, teamwork, communications, expressing our feelings, saying no where we are supposed to say no. And all these things are very, very important in our work life. And it's a huge gap. So this gap, would you say it's a bug or a feature?
So to be honest, like this particular question, I don't even know where to sit. Right. Maybe I'm so much of an optimistic person that I believe that a change can happen. Right. You mentioned something like when we're chatting about the curriculum and, you know, the bureaucracy that exists within institutions. Because the truth is that maybe a private institution, because they have autonomy of how they operate, can decide like it's easier for them. It might not be like an easy breezy, you know, it might take them one or two sessions to figure out, okay, like we need to change this isn't working, but then they have autonomy of themselves to make that happen. But we now talk about the public institutions where it has to get to the federal level and then they would change and correct and bring that back. Like it might take a long time. And that's why I said it's possible, it's doable if we have the right people in places of authority to make it happen. But yes, it is doable. So I think it's a feature that can be solved. But the most important thing is that when do we wake up to this realization, and when do we decide that we need to get it fixed? So yeah, maybe it's a future. I would say it's a future.
Yeah. That I believe we'll get back to it, but there's something that came to my mind right now. Because okay, now people's eyes are open, right? We're not seeing what the market really wants, and there are very few courses in the university or institutions that feed that thing that the market wants. So more people are now gravitating towards it, which means that because of the supply to those courses, not many people can be taken. So it means that some people, even though they know what the market needs, are disadvantaged from getting into those courses that we train them to fit what the market needs. And one thing that I think we should address is I don't want to call them unnecessary courses. I won't call my course of study unnecessary. It's very important. I studied transport management in school, and it's very, very important because transport is part of life and it needs professionals to manage. But there are courses, which I will not mention their names, that are not supposed to be learned in the university. Not because they are not for once being useful, but the need for them no longer exists. So those courses, they have to be scrapped so that resources will be moved more to those courses that the market now needs. Now, this is the argument that comes with that. They're like, if now everybody is now into tech, for instance, or if everybody is now into management, for instance, who will do the other things? Let's address that. How do we create a balance between what has been, not like they are currently not alive now, but they are very, very need to places they are needed. How do we create a balance between like fading out of those ones and dedicating resources more to what the market needs based on what the courses that universities and institutions provide? Because my question, that was a long one.
Absolutely, I get it. This is a systemic problem, right? And by systemic, I mean like it boils down to the economy. It boils down to the function of the government. What have you put in place? For example, you mentioned that you studied transport management. It's not a useless course. It is necessary to have because you need people. You need people who studied that and have like a good understanding of how to manage the transportation system. Take, for example, in Lagos, the transportation network is whacked. right? So when you talk about transport management, transport people who are transport managers are supposed to be working hand in hand with the city architects. How are you creating, like, what's the transport network we have within a city? How are you building for this? There is no useless cause, in my opinion. It's not, that's why I say it's a systemic problem. What is it that needs to be done? Do we even have the right environment for all these things to thrive, for all of all these careers to thrive in, right? And then I'll go back to say that not everyone needs to go to the university. So there's this idea, and it's really the outcome of what has been passed on to us, right? So if you do not have a BSc, you're useless. But that's not the case. People who typically go to the university and then go on to do like a master's and a PhD are people who want to go focus on academia or research, right? So it's very theoretical in that sense. If, for example, you wanted to be a civil engineer, you should be going to a technical college where you are getting hands-on experience, right? So as a civil engineer, your lecturer is probably like a consultant for a Julius Berger or something, and you are taking on site to go see how it works. It's not just sitting down in the classroom and telling them XYZ. Sometime last week, I was having a chat, I was on the radio station, and the presenter did say he studied something physics, and when he had to do his research, like his project, it was what was actually assigned to him at this time was some topic that was now even extinct. Before he could find it was only one person that he could now find to give him understanding of what this was going to be. And then imagine that it was already obsolete at that time. It was not needed. But because that's what is stated as part of the things that they need to do at that point, he went on to do it. But it's useless because nobody in Nigeria is using that system anymore. But he had to go and write a project on it. Why? So of all these courses are important, they have their own relevance, but it's like we need to consider how are we working to ensure that we are moving with the future, we are moving with the time that we are in. So you say, take for example, there are newer career paths which are not traditional that young people might be considering to go into, but then you realize that their parents are not so comfortable because, hey, I don't know this thing that you're saying that you're going to go and do. Please,
yeah,
go to school, go and study. I don't mind if you do elect in Unilag, as long as you go to Unilag, right? And the child, like, this person is probably not interested in taking this course, or you say, you must be an engineer or you must be a doctor, so go and study medicine. And then you find yourself in College of Medicine, but their mind is really in cybersecurity. But so, you know, there are neo schools that people can leverage, but then a lot of I can understand the plight of parents, right? Because in all of all this, they are looking out for the security of their child. They want to ensure that, oh no, please go for a course that will earn you money. They do not understand this new work that you are talking about, which one is cybersecurity. For you want to be doing yahoo yahoo. That's the first one you hear cyber, because when you say cyber crime, you're not saying cybersecurity. Is it yahoo yahoo you want to do? Yeah, deceiving me. You want to go and be doing yahoo yahoo online, and you say that you're doing cybersecurity. Then imagine that you now say you want to study cybersecurity online. They're not going to listen to you. So I think that we need to be able to also like put more awareness. And so those who are already working in this part, in this, you know, newer career part, need to shine the light the more and speak about what they do. And that's one way that we can also help the generations coming after us. Because then if we're able to talk about these things more openly, if we're able to speak in the right rooms, then maybe parents would understand. I was recently having a chat with a lady who her daughter has just finished from secondary school, and she's saying that she wants her to wait for 1 year before she goes into the university. Why? Because she doesn't think that her child is mature enough, which is fine, which is the appropriate thing to do. But I was trying to encourage her that she can start to take courses from, you know, this new universities that it's online, and she's still at home with you, but then she's learning something as opposed to just sitting and waiting for 1 year because she don't think she's mature enough to go into the university. So the more that we talk about the opportunities that are available, I think that it would also help the coming generations, the younger ones, to see what's available to them and also their parents.
I see the point you're trying to make now. Instead of trying to fix this systemic problem, it is more of communicating and helping people to understand, especially parents, to understand where the tides are moving. So once they know where the tides are moving, they'll be able to consider many options outside university.
I would really love for the systemic problem to be solved, but the reality is that for how long do we wait? When you're given a lemon, you make a lemonade out of it, right? So leverage the opportunities that are there. But like, left to me, I really would love to see a time when these problems, these challenges are solved for. Because I don't see the reason why anybody should go through 4 years of higher education and then come out and they're still unemployable and they're now having to go look for a, let me call it, finishing school, quote unquote. Like, you spent 4 years and then you don't know what you're going to do when you come out after 4 years. I had a lecturer from a private university share with me that she has students who are saying to her, I'm graduating and I don't know what to do. So in as much as we think it's only like a problem for those who are in public tertiary institutions, it's also a challenge for people who are in private institutions, saying that I'm going to finish from school and I do not know what I'm going to do. Because a lot of people don't, like, I've gone to school, I've learned something, I'm now going to become a lecturer and I'm going to keep teaching what I learned as a student without exactly understanding what the industry is saying.
I see a lot of sense in what you mentioned, because the most interesting lecturers that I've listened to are people that I met during events. They come there as resource people. They are lecturers, but you know that these people have industry experience. Like, and I'm sure that if I can enjoy them that much, I'm sure that students in those schools where they lecture also enjoy them. But the harm is done. The harm is already done. I want us to speak about what now we are product of a systemically faulty institution. Now we are out in the market and then the market is saying, you're not what I want. What are people doing now to fit into what the market wants? Or what can people do for people that are just entering the market or that have been in the market for a while and don't even know what to do? What can they do to fit into what the market is asking?
Yeah, so just before I answer that question, I would like to highlight, or maybe not highlight, but there's something that I have observed that Pan Atlantic University does, which I think is very good, is that they bring in guest lecturers. So industry experts, people who are, you know, industry experts who are working that line, they bring them to come speak to the students from time to time across different courses. So because imagine that you are studying cinematography and all you're doing is like you're just in class and okay, a camera is brought one day and whatever. When you hear from someone who is working with that, who is like very good at that, or someone who is in the production industry and has like a production company, the person comes and is telling you about the different sides to it. This is how it works. And this is how the business side also works. And then it starts to open your mind as a student to understand or see the possibilities in what you're studying, as opposed to like, okay, I'm just going to read this and write it to my exam and pass. But now you're engaging with industry experts. I think that's something that people, so Pan Atlantic, EDC, LBS, they all do this where they bring in industry experts to come share and lecture the students from an expert's point of view. Now, so your question, what can be done since we're here already? Well, I'm sure, like, we've alluded to this throughout, like, in the course of our conversation severally now, that there are now new universities or platforms where you can upskill yourself. As much as ideally like for you to just focus on that as opposed to doing something that you'd rather not be doing, it is our reality. And I try to encourage young people to pick a skill even when you're in school. I know people who have come, so at the Talent Pipeline, we're empowering young people with skills that get them employable, and so we run bootcamp programs. And when we have young people come through our programs, we do career guidance, and we encourage them, what is it that you're passionate about? What is it that you like? What's something that you would love to do? Yes, you're studying this. Do you see yourself going into this? If you do not, so what is it? Before your 4 years of higher education elapses, are you already thinking of what next for you? You're going to graduate, you're going to get your certificate. What is next for you? You're going to go do your NYC. What is next for you? Now you need to start thinking about it. We do encourage them to volunteer, because a lot of times you want to start out in an area or in an industry where you have no experience. Somebody's going to want to take you on. So as you go on these platforms and you're learning about, you know, even if it's software engineering, data analytics, product management, digital marketing, whatever, you're learning, you are practicalizing, so you can give yourself a mini project, just something to show that you understand what you're learning. Like, it would even give you more confidence to know that you know what you're learning. Find somebody who is an expert, someone who can mentor you, who can look through the project you're working on and, you know, correct you. Volunteer. Sometimes you go to volunteer and you realize that when you do a good job, or even if you do a good job, I was going to say, or even if you don't do a good job, but please do a good job when you go to volunteer, you'll find out that like people are willing to cover some costs. They'll give you a stipend. It might not be a major salary, but then that way you're already building up your experience. I like to say to young people, do not focus on money at the very early stage. Money is important. Like, we all need money to survive. But what you should be focused on is building your experience, getting skills, acquiring skills that can help you move further. So as much as you're getting all of all those skills you're learning about, so either software development or data analytics or whatever course you decide to go and pick up, you also want to develop your interpersonal skills. How do you relate with people? How do you communicate with people? Can I work with people? That's something you want to go and think about and start to talk to yourself. You can read up about it. How do I engage with people more? How can I network? As much as, like, you know, social media, quote unquote, is for entertainment, I like to learn from different things. I learn from watching movies. Like, I learn from watching comedies. Is that, sometimes I finish watching the comedy show and I'm just thinking about, oh, so, like, this XYZ happened. Okay. Maybe if I was to do something like this, I would rather do it that way. You learn from the minutest of things, right? So even as you're on social media, who are the people that are on your feed, right? Who are the people you are following? The people that you want to emulate, or you're just interested in memes and all the jokes, it's fine. It's good. Like, Nigeria has already had enough for me to laugh every now and then. But then I also believe that, you know, social media is also a place where you can learn from people. So you want to follow, you want to look for good mentors. A lot of times when we talk about, when we think about mentorship, we're looking for, well, I need to go and meet this person and say, mentor me. Someone can mentor you without communicating with you, because, like, a lot of these people who you look up to, they probably have on their LinkedIn page, they're writing about their work, they're writing about the type of things that they do, they're writing on their Instagram, they're writing on Twitter. Are you only following bands and football gist and BBN Nigeria and all of all that? How are you learning? Right, there are different tools for us to learn. The world is a global village. You can learn from someone who is not even in the same continent as yourself, but by just following their content and seeing what they're doing is also a good way to start to upskill yourself.
So upskilling, and there are schools, new schools that are keeping up to date with the curriculum that we have now. You mentioned something about what Talent Pipeline does, trying to help people to discover themselves and where they fit in the grand scheme of things in the market. And I want to ask that, how do you measure success? You or any other institutions that are helping to fill that gap, how would you measure and measure success? You know, people are getting jobs, or people now self-actualize, or how do you measure success?
I'd say that, and you hit it right when you mentioned that, like, you know, people getting jobs. So, like, getting jobs is one thing, but then those talents staying on the job or even getting better opportunities after that is a good way to measure success. Like, this person has come through our program, this person has done this for XYZ, we got the person their first placement, or their, you know, we found them some position where they could fill in. How long did they stay? Is this talent, are they going to call me back to say that, oh, the people you placed in our company after 1 month, they're not doing anything? And then that obviously is that it shows that you did not do something right. But then if you have people who, and of course there would always be, like, there are times where certain things might go wrong. It might just be one person and, oh, we just realize that the person is not a right fit for us, and then they go. If when it becomes a constant issue, then you know that there's a problem. But I think success is when the people who have come through the program are now able to find jobs and stay in the jobs and even get greater opportunities or bigger opportunities is a good sign of success for us. I think I can speak for other talent accelerators too when I say that, you know, getting them jobs and then them staying on the jobs and even getting greater opportunities afterwards is a good success metric for us.
Yeah, and something that just crossed my mind now is, well, we hear people maybe in the corporate or the traditional market, job market space, saying that the tech people are putting too much importance on tech. And it seems to me that I think it's not like an exaggeration, but it's valid, because if you look at the kind of jobs tech prepare people for, it makes them global candidates. You get. And so it means that the opportunities that you're pushing people to, it means that it's not like you're going to saturate the Nigerian space, for instance. It means that you're getting them prepared to be useful in other clients, even while they are still in Nigeria, because you can also make the same argument for other countries. But you have to travel to be in those spaces to be active, like, for instance, nursing. But some of these career paths across your borders, people are looking for you and you can still be useful to them. So that was another thing that came to mind. And I don't know if you want to speak to that. Are we talking too much about tech? Is the appeal really there? That are we over exaggerating?
Tech is, like they say, tech is the new oil, right? At some point it was oil and gas. Everybody wanted to get into oil and gas. And then now tech is the new oil. I think that first of all, I like to think about technology as an enabler, right? And in terms of enabling, so it enables business owners to even function more efficiently and better. It also enables businesses to, so in terms of efficiency and better, it helps save costs to some extent, you know. And then COVID-19 made it even more, much more glaring, right? With the whole, everybody can now work remotely. Some of us already started working remotely before COVID-19, but with COVID-19, just like, oh yeah, so this is doable. And like my friend would say, or likes to say, that yeah, tech was his breakthrough in life, right? He's currently running a fellowship now where he's gotten young people to where we're helping them upskill, so taking different courses and getting mentorship, because that was something that he saw value in. Tech saved his life. That's what he says, like, in his literal, I was trying to quote it, but he says tech saved his life, because he wouldn't be where he is today if it wasn't because of technology. But yes, he is a core, you know, tech person. I've worked within the tech ecosystem for about a decade now. I haven't written a line of code, right? But when we talk about technology, the first thing that comes to mind is, for, like we said, software engineering or design. But like, there's so many other diverse roles. Who's going to take care of business? Who's going to take care of operations? Even when we talk about law, for example, you know, so law falls under business. There are different ways that with whatever skill you have that you can get into tech, right? It's just knowing, how do I fit into this ecosystem? What is it? What's the value I have, and how can I bring it here? And that's why you have to do a lot of research to understand what can you bring to the table even as I come into tech. So now it's now, at some point growing up, used to be when you hear customer care agent, it just feels like, oh, that's somebody who would work for a telecommunications organization where you're just sitting down listening to people complain and things like that. But you know, there is customer success management. I mean, for people who are not familiar with our, when they hear customer success, the first thing that comes to their head is that type of customer care. I'm just going to sit down there, and then I'll be calling, and people will be calling in an agent center, and I'll just be responding, and like, they will pay me, whatever. But as a customer success manager, what you're essentially doing is that you are feeding the people working on the product team, with what the customers want, because you are in tune, or you're communicating with the customers. Yes, you're getting their complaints. You're reaching out to them to find out if they are satisfied with the offering. You're thinking through the customer journey for the product. Because you see, all these our tech bros, like, this is it, and it works. Like, because it's technology, like, it's very sweet. You build something that comes to life. And then a lot of times, there's a possibility that they lose touch with the human element of it, right? So everybody can fit into the tech space. It's just about, what is it that I can do? What value am I bringing into this ecosystem? And how can I make it work? You hear people who are community managers. What are you doing as a community manager? You're bringing people together. People that, like, with like minds. People that want to see, you know, a particular, they have like similar interests and goals. And then how are you bringing them together? Connecting them, connecting the dots, ensuring that they're growing together as a community and making things happen. There are limitless opportunities in tech. Like, limitless opportunities in tech. So when we think about tech, let's not just think only about deep tech and all of all that. There's like local tech, there's products, there's product management, there are different roles. Like, I don't want to have to start mentioning all of them, but like, there are different roles that you can just even fit into without having, quote unquote, the tech skills. I remember, like, so maybe seven, so initially, like, when I got into tech, there's the whole, oh, tech is tech worth it, and I was in that zone. And then after a while, I'm like, please, people should stop calling me Texas. I'm not a Texas. I'm not like core tech. But I'm in tech, and that's it. That's only period, right? Like, I'm in tech, so why can't I go to Texas? But as a point, I'm just
what are you doing, like, okay, tech? What have you always done in tech?
So yes, interesting. I've had an interesting merry-go-round in tech. So even when I started out and I was doing community management, it was not a popular role at the time, so I didn't even know that what I was doing was community management. I was just bringing people together, trying to connect founders to investors, putting together events and all of all that. And it didn't occur to me that it was coming. So my journey in tech has been around community manager. I'm still a community manager at heart. So community management. I've led communication and partnership for an accelerator here before, programs. So putting together, developing and implementing acceleration programs. I've been a business development executive. And so finally, where I am right now is mostly, I've now coined another title of myself, which is innovation consultant. So I do consult for even corporate entities who are looking to incorporate, get things going with the startup ecosystem and formulating strategies as to how there can be that synergy and collaboration, and also still consulting for programs for startup founders, and essentially like things that help us grow as individuals within the tech ecosystem. And then we also have the talent pipeline, where we are empowering young people with skills that get them employable, and also provide them with, you know, career guidance, mentorship. Yeah, in a nutshell, that's me. So I'm a teacher. I am a consultant.
So that's not it. So irrespective of what you do and study, so it's just, that was why I think this speaks to you saying this is a teacher, not a boss. Because you can actually, whatever it is you learned in school, you can actually find a place for it in tech. It's just for you to know where it fits. And I can see it from your journey now, and something that could have been considered not useful in tech, it's actually useful once you find your place there. And I think we should move from there to this question of some talent find a way to make themselves fit for what the market wants. But some companies absorb this talent and make them fit for what they want. So I wanted to speak to that. What companies can do to, because some don't know. And I'll make an example of myself. By the time I finished studying, I've never really wanted to work in the industry. Right. Some of my colleagues are doing great things in the mobility startup world, logistics startup world, because yes, you get, they are doing supply chain. They are doing all of those things. But I've never really wanted to go to the industry. Right. So I just felt like, okay, the best place I can be is try to become a lecturer. That was my plan. But so I said, let me start from teaching. I started from teaching. And it happened that because I love to write, I got the opportunity to get tech points, and I was trained to become a journalist. That was not something I would have expected. So how are companies helping people to realize what the market wants and making them to become the exact thing the market wants? Or how can they do it if they're not doing it yet?
Okay. So I think that, you know, the example you just cited of yourself and how the organization you work with helps you on that journey to actualizing this side of you, and now you're a journalist and you're doing well at it and you love what you're doing, that's like a good way to go about it. However, realistically, it might be difficult for a lot of companies to do, because at the point where you're thinking, oh, I need to hire for XYZ role, and you know you have limited resource, it's almost like, I just need to find somebody who can do this function. I don't want to have to go train them. I don't want to have to, like, you know, pick up somebody and train. However, you find out that some organizations, when they hire for specific roles, like maybe you come in and you're working in a particular line, and there is a need to set up a new team, and it could even be for like a short project. It's a two-way event where the talent has to be open enough, or, you know, outspoken enough to step into the shoes and say, like, I want to do this, I want to learn this, this is where I see myself. And then it's another thing for the organization to say, oh, there is a possibility or there are potentials here. Okay, go start it off, right? And I've seen this happen over time where people hire a talent for a particular function and that talent is working. So first of all, you even have to be excellent at what you start out with, even though that's not where your interest really lies. And then when that opportunity arises, you're able to say, I would like to try this out, because you've given value. The company might be willing enough to let you take on that position and see how it goes. And then you find out that there are people who have been working within an organization, and then all of a sudden there's a new department opening the organization and telling the person to head it, because they have given value over time in the work that was assigned to them until that was made available. So it just goes to say, when we say be prepare ahead for the opportunity. It's not necessarily saying that, oh, Oluwani Femi has been preparing herself to be a journalist. We're probably working in one capacity and you were doing it well, and then now there's an opening. Oh, I would actually like to learn this, so let me chip in. And then, okay, she's not doing bad at this. Let's now train her to become a proper journalist. And that's how it has worked out for you. And I'm happy to hear. I also wanted to add, right, and it's something that we also talk about in our bootcamp programs, where so it's okay to want to start out like in a very in a technical role, but we all know what the market is saying. You've got to have experience before I can hire you. And sometimes, like, even the side projects you do for yourself might not be enough to get you in, because they believe that it's just you building it and it could have been any which ways, right? It's okay for you to take on a role that has like a low barrier of entry whilst you continue to learn. So I'll say, take for example, it could be data analytics or even software engineering, and you take on a role with, like, as an operations associate, for example. And this is just me, so I'm not trying to undermine anybody's role. So you take on an operations intern role, and you're doing that whilst you're still learning your data analytics or learning your software engineering, but you're giving value, you're focusing on your work as an operations intern or associate. And then over time, because you're learning this, you're speaking to the data analyst in the company or with that team to say, oh, is there something that I can help you guys with? Well, I'm learning this, so this is what I'm doing. And then you find out that, like, when they have a lot of things to do, they're able to assign you like little tasks, provided that you have completed the work that is on your own table, or you're learning design, or you're learning software engineering, and you're like, oh, I'm learning this language, if there's something I can help you guys with, I would like to do it. Because it's easier for you to transition, like when you want to transition roles, it's easier for you to transition within an organization where you are in than to go start from scratch, right? And that's something that you wouldn't be taught within the four walls of a school, or you wouldn't be taught even in the, like, you know, your regular talent accelerators. So like, oh, we're just teaching you to become a software engineer, and then we'll try and find you a job, and then it might be taking forever, because the truth is, you've got to feed, you've got to fend for yourself, you need to make money. So if you find a path where you have, like, you know, where there's a low barrier to entry, go in, take that opportunity whilst you continue to build your dream career. You keep learning, you find opportunities where you can support within the team, and then I guess, and I've seen this happen for a few people where they're working within an organization, they started out being, they, someone who even started out as an assistant, now went on to become a product manager, right? Because she had put herself in that path.
A good way to end this conversation is, and I think you've mentioned it a number of times during this conversation, what you don't have access to, you don't know, you don't. Because some parents that are telling their children that just go to University of Lagos, go and learn something technical that you have learned in a technical school, for instance, it is because they don't know better. So I need you to touch, like, on the importance of exposure when it comes to fixing this gap. Talents putting themselves at an advantage for what the market wants. Where does exposure come in? How can people get exposure? Both on the part of the companies that are going to hire them, and also on the part of the talent that we're talking about.
Now, we all like to talk about personal branding, and we see this on LinkedIn. Now, in fact, someone sent me a screenshot yesterday. There was this graph around, that was the highest, and at the top they put a clown's face or picture, and then there was, like, you know, someone who is doing the actual work, that was the lowest, right? I faced this a lot, because you just want to work, and you don't put out or talk about what you do, and then that's what people say, like, nobody finds you out. Fortunately for me, I think in the early stages of my career, like when I got into tech, I did network a lot. Right. So most of the opportunities that I have gotten have always come through referrals, because then these people know me and then they know what I'm able to do. And so they're happy to always refer me for, like, all these opportunities that they find, that they know that I'm a good fit for. So I think it's very important. It's essential that you build skills, you give value, and then you interact, you engage, you network with people. And, like, I try to encourage, you know, even people who are younger than I myself, and we're working in tech together. When I find opportunities where I see all of these events, I'm telling them, oh, I think you should be here. You might think that it's nothing, but, like, come here, prepare for the people that you're going to meet. And I always give this example. I remember, like, when there was somebody who I met, and he's still a good part of my life right now, way back in 2016. But I knew that I was going to see him at that conference, and I prepared the conversation I wanted to have with him in my head first. And when I saw him, I walked up to him and I had the conversation. And, you know, when I did that, I'm just like, okay, that was easy breezy. And it just gave me the confidence and courage to continue to network and, like, you know, talk to people who, quote unquote, are similarly way, way, way bigger than me. Like, I can walk into, I'm shy, I'm an introvert, but I can walk into a room and I would speak to the most important, quote unquote, quote, person there, like, you're my friend. But it's come over time. Right, but then also ensure that you're giving value. Research. Learn from people's own experiences. We all, like, there's the saying, experience is the best teacher. I agree. And sometimes I say, like, it doesn't have to be your own personal experience. You can learn from some other person's own mistake and their success, and see what they did that got them to be successful, and see what they did that, you know, that set them back a bit, so that you can also avoid that pit hole. So I'd say, be in tune with what's happening. Build your digital footprint. So if we open your Instagram or your Twitter or your LinkedIn, are we going to be seeing only football bands or Big Brother Nigeria and whatnot? Like, are you talking about what you do? Are you talking about the work that you do? As I'm saying this, I'm talking to myself too. Are you speaking about the work that you do, and are you engaging? One thing that I believe, so when we talk about money and we talk about wealth, I like to say that I'm reaching people. And how am I reaching people? By networking, by meeting people, by offering to be a valuable person to them. And essentially, these are some of the things that we're even going to be talking about at the, so we have the Talent Pipeline, we have a summit that I'll be holding on the 17th of August called the Future Talent Summit. And we'll be talking about branding, how are you, like your personal brand and your career in the next 10 years. We'll be talking about how do you network, how can you transition from, like, you know, career transitioning, what can you do as you leave school, how are you positioning yourself from leaving the classroom and then making global impacts. We're going to have, like, you know, really interesting conversations, essentially, so that those who are looking to build their career or who are already building their career know how to position themselves even, like, you know, much more better. And it's also a good place to network with like-minded people.
Yeah, because what you don't know, you don't know. There's no way what you don't know can help you, and you don't want to be at a disadvantage. Sincerely, the job market is brutal. You don't want to be at a disadvantage. Thank you very much, Manny, for having this conversation with me. I enjoyed it too, and I know that people that are going to listen to it are also going to enjoy it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Nifemi, for having me on your podcast. It's been amazing speaking with you. This is something that, like, I'm really passionate about, and I would love to see a change happen. So yes, it's been awesome chatting with you.